Blog Talk Radio.
Tonight is a particular honor for me because, let's face it, my presence on this stage is pretty unlikely. My father was a foreign student, born and raised in a small village in Kenya. He grew up herding goats, went to school in a tin roof shack. His father, my grandfather, was a cook.
Welcome to Current Events with Patrick Cook. I'm your host, Patrick Cook, coming to you live from Dallas, Texas, as I do every Sunday at 4 p.m. Central Time, 5 o'clock Eastern. We are the number one resource for small business and nonprofits. To learn how you can showcase your business or nonprofit, go to our website at TaylorMade101.com. That's TaylorMade101.com for details. Man, we have another great show in store for you today. So sound the alarm! Get on Facebook, Twitter, Foursquare, or Tumblr. Send out emails and text messages. Call your friends and family and tell them to tune in right now to Current Events with Patrick Cook. To join the conversation, the number to call is 323-580-5712. Once again, the number is 323-580-5712. And for those of you that are listening via Blog Talk Radio, leave your comments. Click the follow button or follow me on Twitter. And that's at TaylorMade101. I'll be reading your tweets live on the air. And I also have a chat room open. Out there in the chat room, you can leave your comments or ask questions. So whatever your pleasure, chat room, Twitter, Facebook, or just plain old my bell, we want to hear from you. But first, let's take a look at the current events.
Greetings and salutations, everyone. We have another great show in store for you today. So let's take a look at what's on tap. Today, we're going to be discussing the LeBron James decision. You know, he spent some really fruitful years in Miami, and now he's going back to Cleveland. What do you think about that? We're also going to take a look at the Supreme Court decisions over the last couple of weeks. We also look at the craziness of the GOP, in particular Sarah Palin and her bid for impeachment, and much, much more. So to join the conversation, the number to call is 323-580-5712. Once again, the number is 323-580-5712. And here to help me break all of this down is the executive producer of Current Events and the chief operating officer of Cook Enterprise, and I must say an author of Reflections, What I Know to Be True. I introduce to some and present to others no other than the wonderful, the magnificent, the great Jima Hill Cook. Jima, welcome to the show.
Thank you. Glad to be here.
It is always a pleasure having you just do your thing on the show. Before we get to LeBron James, we were off last week and we spent some time in Kansas City. You did another book signing. How did it go?
It went well. It was an interesting weekend of events there in Kansas City, but I did have a book signing on that Saturday afternoon, and I actually also met a young lady who had written a book. It's a book called Mommy Diaries, actually, and she has one of the chapters in there. She was there for her family reunion as well, and so we exchanged exchanged books and things of that nature. So hopefully as she goes through reflections, she can reflect back on on some of those days of her early days of pregnancy as well. So it was a great time. I enjoyed myself. It's always good to be home, and this was a good time.
Awesome. Also, over the last few weeks, you've also been directing, or I should say the director of a youth program at Faith Missionary Baptist Church in Rowlett, Texas. And you've been serving up to about 50 kids on a daily basis, feeding them breakfast and lunch, and providing youth services, educational services throughout the day. How is that going?
It's going fairly well. It just further reminds me and reiterates to me the need for such a program is what we try to do out there. It's community-based. It's free to the community. It's open to anyone. The program, as you say, is structured Monday through Friday, 8 to 2. We have breakfast from 8 to 9, and we serve lunch from 11:30 to 12:30. We're part of the summer nutrition program with the City of Garland's Fair Housing Office. That's where the program is funneled through under the leadership of Pam Harris and her staff there. And so we encourage kids to be there for the whole day, or if not, they're more than welcome to just come and eat and leave. But as I say, to reiterate the need for such a program as this, kids lose a lot over the summer in terms of their abilities, in terms of reading and math and comprehension. And we spend a lot of time on those areas. We spend a lot of time getting them to recognize that reading is important, and every day you will be reading something, and that comprehending what you're reading, understanding it, being able to articulate back to someone exactly what was read and your thoughts and feelings about it. Writing is important. We encourage them every day. We journal over some topic that I come up with. And you would be amazed at the struggle our kids are having in terms of writing, focusing on putting it on paper in some sort of fashion, where to indent a paragraph and to have punctuation and correct spelling and just basic tenets of English is a lost art form, to say the least. And so recognizing that this is happening across the board reminds me of why I do what I do. Some days it can be taxing, it can be frustrating, because kids would be kids, as you stated, averaging anywhere between 40 to 50 kids a day, ages ranging from 4 up to 18, so that's a wide range. And so we get all sorts. And you have some 16, 17-year-olds that act more like the 4-year-olds than the 4-year-olds do. So some days I just think I'm just running one big daycare. So it's taxing, but it's rewarding, because I do know I'm providing a service. And for the kids that come every day, I just say, you know, if you really don't want to be here, then you really don't have to come, or you don't have to stay. But for some reason, they stay. Those that are old enough to walk back and forth from home. So obviously, we're providing them something, and I know it's not just a meal. And so I think it's the attention that we give, the love that we give, that the share of the concern that we show them on a daily basis, I think is what keeps them coming back. And not only do they come back, and they tell other people, which just fascinates me. But it's been rewarding. I'm at my 2-week countdown now, and I'm at that point where I'm like, okay, you know, August 1st can't get here soon enough, so I can sleep in one day, at least one day, let me sleep in. So that's what I'm looking forward to.
You know, I think that's pretty awesome on so many different levels. One, starting with feeding, young children all the way up to teenagers. Two, I would say providing a service that's going to allow them to read on a daily basis, be provided some educational opportunity in order to bridge the gap over the summertime. And then three, providing a safe environment with loved and filled with some, I want to say some transdisciplinary aspect, meaning that they're getting some spiritual teaching. They're getting some math. They're getting some reading. They're getting some life skills. They're getting technology. So I think on so many different levels that that the things that you're doing out there is providing more than a great service to the community. And, you know, you mentioned the fact that they keep coming back, you know. So obviously, you know, there's a void that needs to be filled. And I hear so many people talk about, you know, wanting to do things for kids and want to provide services for kids and want to do this and want to participate in the community. But very, very seldom that you find people actually doing things. And so I commend you for continuing to do this. This is what, year four?
Yes, this is year four.
Yeah. And so, you know, this is an amazing feat. You know, and I want to, you know, want to shift to LeBron James' story, but I want to kind of, you know, before we do that transition, is the fact that, you know, so many kids always look to sport as an outlet. You know, they always look for the basketball or the football or some kind of ball. But invariably what happens is that everybody can't be an athlete. But, you know, most people can be a productive citizen in our society, and they're very seldom prepared to be a productive citizen in our society. So, again, this is the hats off to you. And speaking of sports and athletes and being, you know, somebody that's going to the NBA and being a superstar, LeBron James is all of that. And a bowl of grits or a bowl of cereals or whatever you want to call it. This guy is amazing. He went down in Cleveland and went down to Miami and ended up going to the NBA championship 4 years and winning two out of four championships. That's a pretty amazing thing. He won a couple of NBA MVPs. And so this move to Cleveland, though, Jimmy, let's start with, you know, A, was this a good decision? And B, since it's only 2 years, will he go through this process again where, you know, he's going to be looking to move on out of Cleveland, and then the city of Cleveland is going to hate him again? You think there's going to be another cycle? So, you know, was this a good decision, and would this be a cycle of his?
So it's only for 2 years and not for four?
Yeah, 2 years.
Well, I don't think he's going to win a championship in 2 years, so I'm not really sure why he's going back to Cleveland if his goal is not to win a championship, unless he brings half of the team from Miami with him and throw in a couple other people. I'm not sure if they're going to win a championship. I'm kind of taken aback by the fact that there has not been any push or public, and maybe, and I've kind of been out of the loop for a couple of days, so I may have missed it, but I think the owner there, and I want to say his name was Gilbert, I could be wrong, that could be the Redskins owner. I think that is Red.
Yeah,
Schneider is a Redskin. Gilbert, I think Gilbert is the owner of Cleveland. In my opinion, should publicly apologize to LeBron for the nasty things he said about him when he left 4 years ago. And I don't think we can play like all is well there. I think LeBron is an excellent businessman and knows that this is a business decision. It has nothing to do with my love for the city of Cleveland, or not even my, you know, there's obviously no respect for the owner. But I think just how the owner did all that he did when LeBron left, and the nastiness, the letter he took out and wrote in USA Today or whatever paper it was, he posted that nasty letter in about LeBron. I think he needs to publicly apologize to him for that, because they made a comment that just with him saying he's going to Cleveland, $100 million is headed to Cleveland, just by him saying he's going.
Oh, yeah.
And so with that, you know, brings jobs, you know, to a place that has a very high unemployment rate. Mm-hmm. It brings the potential for some revitalization around the arena, which all of that brings jobs and helps that economy. So I just think, you know, from the business standpoint, whatever got him to go back to Cleveland, maybe it's his sense of duty to help the people out. Maybe he did it more for the people to be able to give them something else to hang their hat on. And maybe this time, they'll take a better advantage of it, you know, and really, you know, utilize it to lift themselves up out of their current circumstance. But I just think the owner needs to apologize publicly. He, you know, I'm sure he said whatever he had to say to LeBron in private. But I think because he publicly, you know, did what he did, then he needs to publicly apologize.
No, there's an article in USA Today by Mitch Albarn, and it says, you shouldn't be known for the worst thing. They're talking about Dan Gilbert tells how he and LeBron James mended the fences based on the story you just talked about. And as Dan Gilbert flew in a private plane to meet LeBron James last Sunday, he made notes about things to say, things he had been thinking about for 4 years since the night James announced on national TV he was leaving Gilbert's Cleveland Cavaliers and taking my talents to South Beach and the Miami Heat. Gilbert had watched this in Sun Valley, Idaho, then dashed to a computer and in about 45 minutes banged out an angry letter meant to reassure his fans. In it, he mocked the King and his nicknames, referred to his leaving as a cowardly betrayal, and promised Cleveland would win a championship before James did. Yeah, right. How did that turn out?
Mm-hmm.
There were a couple of people who tried to talk me out of it, Gilbert tells the reporter on the phone. Frankly, he said, I didn't put it in front of enough people. It was a boom, boom, put it up. That's something I've learned. When you're in an emotional state, wait. That letter came to define Gilbert as a basketball owner. If you Google me, it's the first thing that comes up. He regretted it not long after he had written it, but in the internet world, posted means forever. He pondered that as the plane descended into Florida, he and James hadn't spoke since that night, 4 years. They seemed to each other a few times. I sit on the baseline when he came back to play in Cleveland. He looked at me from the free throw line. Not good, not bad, just look. Yeah, right. Now he was scheduled to meet James in secret to discuss what seemed impossible just days earlier, a return to Cavs. The whole world was hanging on the news, but as Gilbert glanced out of the window for a moment, he wasn't a billionaire Detroit businessman or an NBA owner. He was every guy seeing his ex-wife after that divorce, every teen guitarist seeing a former friend who broke up the band. I told LeBron, guys, where he comes back or not, I really want to clear the air. It shouldn't be like this. So, you know, what's interesting is that, and the story goes on and to talk about other things, Gilbert, you know, and how the conversation went. But what's interesting is that, I talk about this all the time, the fact that, you know, our society is a black and white society. No, better yet, it is a minority-majority society. And whenever you're in a minority, the majority group, whatever that may be, always look down on the minority group. And then what's interesting is about a LeBron James, he doesn't necessarily always be in that minority group as an African-American because he's in that majority group when it comes to dollars, right? So he's in a position now to really, make that owner pay in a lot of ways, or at least he was in a position to make that owner pay in a lot of ways. I'm glad to see, you know, LeBron James really – at the end of the day, be the bigger man in this whole situation because he really didn't go after the owner like the owner went after him, you know. And in fact, how the owner pretty much incited a riot basically by making the statement he did and ultimately causing the fans to react in such a way as opposed to taking the high road. So what do you think about Gilbert's position in trying to mend the relationship, as he say, as opposed to just trying to make sure that King James doesn't do anything to kind of disrupt that relationship?
Well, it's almost, you know, it's superficial because he could have mended the relationship 2 years
ago.
Yeah,
that's true. That's right. I agree with that.
If there was some sincerity there and some not attached to an event, then he could have done it 2 years ago when LeBron was still playing for Miami. You know,
yeah.
So I'm not buying it. You know, I think it's what it is. But I think it's just because LeBron is coming back. If LeBron had chosen to stay in Miami, would he have still tried to reach out to him?
Oh no.
Mend the fences?
Right.
I doubt it because he hadn't reached out before now. So, you know, what makes this time so, you know, 4 years have gone by and now you're ready, you know, to reconcile. It shouldn't even lasted that long.
So that goes to show you how, you know, most of these NBA coaches, you know, is not so far-fetched than Sterling. I mean, you know, the stuff that he did, it seems like this is it's kind of the culture of the NBA coaches. I mean, owners.
For sure. I mean, that's why they were so glad they got off the hook for not having to vote, because none of them, in my opinion, honestly, probably could have voted a clear conscience, probably except for the dude out in Sacramento. I think he's about the only one I could, and he's about the only one I remember knowing that I've seen, because I don't think Mark Cuban could have said it.
No,
I know he couldn't.
No.
Exactly. You know, I don't think he could have voted and hands down and, you know, had all with all this in the third, fourth, and fifth to kick Sterling out. So they were given a gift when they thought the sale was through, because then they didn't have to vote on it, because then it would have been public who voted and who didn't, you know, who voted to keep him and who didn't vote to keep him, and that could have messed them all up. So, you know, I think, you know, the commissioner, you know, made a hasty move, because Sterling to this day, you know, so many months later, is still the owner of the Los Angeles Clippers.
Yeah.
Nothing's changed there, you know, and I don't know, and you're in the seat, and you're in the signing time of players and all those sorts of things. That organization needs to figure out what it's doing, because I'm pretty sure there's going to be some pushback from people wanting to go out there. So I think it is part of the NBA culture in terms of their ownership, as it is with the NFL. I don't doubt that they all have some, because they are owners mentality, that they own people. You know,
yeah,
you look
exactly.
At,
yeah, absolutely.
You look at how sports is ran. It's ran like a big slave trade. I mean,
yeah,
you look at the combine for the NFL, and you know, you got people out there running and showing off all these skills and basically open your mouth and let me see your teeth.
White teeth, they're right. Exactly.
I mean, that's the only thing missing.
Yeah.
So,
at least that's the only thing that's not betrayed publicly, right? Because who knows?
Right,
they may go through a ceremonial showing your white teeth, even though it's not not displayed publicly. So it wouldn't surprise me at all.
Exactly.
So USA Today is reporting that LeBron James is regarded as the best player in the world and was the number one free agent this summer. Now he's looking out for number one. James planned to sign a 2-year, $42.2 million contract with the Cleveland Cavaliers. A person familiar with the details of told USA Today, and this was reported around noon today. So it looks like he's going to take a 2-year deal for $42.2 million. But besides that, he got all kind of endorsement deals and other things going on. So I think it's about time for him to get a big payday. You know, I'm not sure whether it's rain in the grand scheme of things of you know, big contracts. But certainly he is he's certainly worth every dollar because of the fact that his draw, right? I mean, it's not the much of just his talent, but the fact that, you know, the what he draws in retail, what he draws when he plays any team, no matter who the team is, they want to see him play. So he is a big draw, and he is worth every penny because they're making 10 times that much on top of it.
I agree. I think it's time, you know, that he's going to flex his muscles on, you know. He's somebody was making a reference to how when he's on the court, the difference between him and Kobe and some of the other guys is that LeBron actually does not want to shoot first and pass second. He wants to pass and, you know, and to get the other people involved. And I think that's what makes him a great player. I mean, I like LeBron. I like his. I think over the years, I've come to like him more than what I did in the beginning. I just thought it was too much hype coming out of high school. But he's proven himself in terms of how he carries himself as a man. Hasn't been any scandal with him. You know, you don't hear about extra people. And once he settled down. He's gotten married. He has his kids and his family. And so you can't ask for anything more. And he's as you often talk about, he's setting a legacy up for his children and for his name to be carried out. So I think I agree. I think it's time he go ahead on and reap the benefits of what his name carries. because somebody else is getting some money off of King James. You can definitely
A whole bunch of people getting some King James.
Right, a whole bunch of people. So it's time that he's earned that.
Yeah. You know, speaking of making money off of people, people are making a whole lot of money off of Barack Obama, too. You know, this whole craziness about suing and the whole craziness about impeachment, you know, all of these issues are directly related to the bottom line, right? Because if I use that inflammatory language, then I can go out and raise funds from low information voters in order to, you know, help me with that cause. Now, there's no way in the world that a Sarah Palin is going to, you know, bring up some impeachment. There's no way in the world that the suit that John Boehner is allegedly filing against the president is going to go anywhere, right? It's just a waste of taxpayers' money, but it does a lot of good when it comes to fundraising, because there's a handful of people. Now, that handful of people, you know, if it's in your district and you're trying to raise funds and you go out there and say, I'm going to sue the president or I'm going to impeach the president, people are going to show up with some money in their hands. You know, they have no idea that the health care that they're getting being provided now is because of the president. They have no idea because of the way the stock market is booming right now is because of the president. They have no idea that the unemployment rate is down to the way it is because of the president. They have no idea that they were able to stay in their homes because of the president, but yet and still, they go out and they want to use this craziness against the president. What we really need to be preaching is suing Congress. You know, I'm really concerned about what it takes to sue Congress, right? I'm really piqued. My interest is piqued in that area because if John Boehner can sue the president, it stands to reason that the American people can sue Congress for not doing their job, right? So, you know, after the break, I want to talk a little bit about that. I want to talk about the immigration problem. I want to talk about the impeachment. And I want to talk about this erroneous lawsuit on the other side of the break. You're listening to Current Events with Patrick Cook. Be back in a moment.
You are listening to Current Events with Patrick Cook, coming to you live from Dallas, Texas. My mom and dad will be right back after these messages.
Cook Enterprises have joined forces with Google Inc. and Amazon.com. With this new partnership, our companies, TaylorMade Training and Consulting, Current Events, and Ask Shima, can now offer you the best deals 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. Whether you're looking for a discounted book for your book club or a very special gift for a friend, family member, or loved one, TaylorMade's Marketplace is where you should go first. Visit our website at TaylorMade101.com and click on Marketplace to get the best deals today.
Thank you for your call. Let me read you a couple of my Twitter family, and then I'll have you respond, Dr. Hutchinson. But I want to read the first one from one of my best Twitter family members, Ask Jima. And Ask Jima says, Reverend Al, today is my birthday, and I'm sitting in Barnes & Noble Starbucks watching you online, driving people around me crazy, and I want to wave at her and the folks she's driving crazy and wish her a happy birthday on her 21st birthday. That's my friend, and of course, my Eastbourne friend.
Need a new website? Haven't figured out your social media strategy? Are you finally ready to tweet, post, or blog? Well, look no further. Go to TaylorMade101.com. That's TaylorMade101.com. We are the number one resource for small businesses and nonprofits. We're a full service, interactive consulting firm specializing in social media marketing, web design, technology workshops, as well as leadership and management training.
So go to TaylorMade101.com. That's TaylorMade101.com. Google me.
Welcome back to Current Events with Patrick Cook. To join the conversation, the number to call is 323-580-5712. Once again, the number is 323-580-5712. Before we get to the issue of immigration, which I think is a very important issue, I want to first go to this issue of John Boehner trying to sue the president and Sarah Palin trying to impeach the president. Before we even talk about the specifics, I would like to say I'm not real sure how many lawyers that we have in the United States could really handle Eric Holder and President Obama when it comes to acumen when it comes to law, right? In order for somebody to go after a good attorneys like Eric Holder and the President Obama, they have to have something to stand on. I just don't understand where Sarah Palin and John Boehner get the idea they're gonna go against two heavy hitters like that. Jimmy, what's on their mind?
You know, they caused me to stutter and stammer because they are so, I'm trying to find the right word to describe them, because I agree with you. You do not want to go up against Eric Holder, period, because he's not losing anything. And neither the president. When the president is on, when the law, when he has it and you're talking about the facts, you're not going to be able to emotionalize the facts. The facts are going to take care of themselves.
Right.
And where those two people, and I'm saying that loosely because I'm not even sure they're acting like humans at this point, are way off is that they are expecting hate to have victory over love, over change, over hope, over the facts. They're expecting hate to even trump the facts. That's what they're hoping. And so there's no legalness about that at all. I don't even know if that's a word. But there's nothing John Boehner is trying to sue the president for is legal. And I think, you know how you have to pay for the other party's legal fees? John Boehner should have to come out of his pocket for this nonsense of this lawsuit when it gets kicked back and tell him there's nothing here. Whatever the cost was for them to even review this and to tell him to go somewhere and sit down, he personally needs to pay for it. Not us, the taxpayer. He personally needs to pay for that.
Yeah.
Him,
yeah,
and the Republican Party. All them House people in the Republican Party and the House of Representatives that vote for this to happen, when it's turned back and when it's dismissed and when it's denied, they need to put the bill for this.
You know,
let's get that circulated on change.org.
Yeah, I definitely have to agree with you. You know, there's an article in Newsweek that's entitled GOP Split on Boehner's Lawsuit Against President Obama. And quite naturally, they should be. But with 12 days left in the legislative period, House Speaker John Boehner has concluded that Congress' time would be best spent pursuing a lawsuit against the Obama administration for a waiver it issued over a year ago relating to the Affordable Care Act. Talk of suing the president over his use of executive action has been circulating since June, but until this week, the speaker had not indicated which executive order he would be challenging specifically. On Thursday, Boehner's office released a draft resolution revealing that the lawsuit's charges will target the Obamacare waivers that the administration issued in response to concerns that employers lack sufficient time to comply with one of the acts. So the act's requirement that all employers with more than 50 employees provide coverage to their workers was neither dropped nor altered. However, to give businesses the time they needed to adjust to the shift, The Obama administration said it would delay enforcement of that requirement until 2015. And so basically, because the president didn't act swiftly enough, according to Boehner's lawsuit, is that what he's suing the president for? So what's interesting is that this what I would consider to be busy work for the Congress, right? So they're not in the business of solving the major problems of the day. They're not in the business of passing legislation that will address climate change, would address our issues associated with the environment, immigration, you know, and there's a laundry list of things that Congress could really be addressing, but instead they tend to go after Benghazi, tend to go after over and over again trying to repeal the Affordable Care Act, and now they want to spend time in trying to sue the president. So again, all of this busy work is to keep them moving along, moving down, wasting our tax dollars on something that's really not getting anything. And so this busy work that they're doing is really getting frustrating. That's why, I mean, it's really frustrating me. So that's why I'm saying the American people need to pay attention here. And potentially, since this lawsuit issue has been brought about by the speaker, why not let's begin to look at, investigate whether or not we can sue Congress for not doing their job. What do you think about that?
I agree with you 120,000% because they're the ones that have failed to do their job, and so you call it busy work by filing this petition and lawsuit against the president, and in 4 years, count them if you don't have nothing to do. 4 years that you've had control of the House of Representatives, you have not put forth one job bill. That should be something to be sued about. And I would wish that Congress could be impeached because you lied. You said this is what you were going to do when they ran and they won in 2010. It is 2014, and they have yet to produce one job bill. That's what people need to hear every single day. But you voted to repeal the Affordable Care Act 51 times. The very law now you're wanting to sue the president over because he's given businesses more time at their request. Let's be clear that small businesses sent him a request. A collaboration of them sent him a request asking for more time. Also, Republicans had sent him a request saying, please give these small businesses more time to comply with the mandate. So he gets the request from the small businesses. He gets the request from the Republicans. He weighs it out. He says, okay, I'll give you guys another year to get yourselves together so you can do what you need to do. I'll compromise on this with you Republicans, and now you want to turn around and sue me for the thing you asked me to do. I don't know how this is not comical. I don't know how media is even allowing it to be said in a straight face like there's some validity to it. There's no dadgum validity to this lawsuit. No more. I mean, you know, you got Tracy Morgan Gray to want to sue Walmart because the driver had been working too long.
Right.
I don't know. I mean, for that matter, I'm with you, though. Let's just sue. Let's see what we can do to sue Congress, the House of Representatives, for their lack of action on job creation.
Yeah, I mean, it has to be something.
We have something.
We don't have to wait until election time to be able to put pressure on them, right? I mean, that takes too long for them to do something. I mean, now everybody has pretty much rebounded with respect to the economy, the businesses have, right? But they still hold on to these purse strings, right? And then the fact that the Congress hasn't really done anything to really do anything for the middle class, or the lower class people in order to kind of lift them up. But the businesses are making all the money. They're getting all the tax breaks, making all the money, but the middle class is still suffering. So, it's interesting is that, you know, people always say, well, you got to vote them out of office. Well, if you get them in, they don't follow through, then we need to be able to do something else. We need an option. We need the option where we can get rid of them in the event that they don't do what they said they're going to do. I'm not willing to wait 2, 4, 6 years in order to do that, right? We need to be able to do something, put a lot of pressure on them right away. And, you know, so and the media give them too much coverage, you know, about, you know, this whole craziness about the lawsuit. Why are they getting all that coverage in the first place?
That's my point.
Yeah, I mean, what's making...
There's no way doing John Boehner's press conference, he gets to stand up there and say that nonsense and not be challenged on it. It baffles me. There's no way Sarah Palin, who is irrelevant, she has been irrelevant since they lost in 2008. She walked off her job as governor of Alaska. She has no credibility. She has nothing to stand on. And she gets to get on TV and talk about impeachment. Can she even spell impeachment? Does she even know what it really means to impeach somebody and for what? What has the president done that is considered to be an impeachable offense? Absolutely nothing. And for the people in their party that are that dumb to believe that there's something he's done that requires impeachment, to claim that the issue going on at the border is similar to Katrina, all of that is just nonsense. It's so much nonsense that you almost get tired.
Yeah.
You almost get tired of it, though, because you're like, seriously, I got to still keep fighting y'all about the stuff that we know is not true?
Yeah, I know.
But the answer to that is, yeah, I do. Because if I don't stand up and say something, then you're going to think what you're saying is right, and somebody else is going to believe you, and then they're going to vote based on that nonsense you're talking. So I do have to keep fighting. And I think what happened is we thought we didn't have to keep fighting, but we see now that we do. So I don't see a repeat of 2010 coming this year in the midterm election. I don't see that because people are still fired up and people are pissed off and people are angry for a whole lot of reasons. You're messing with my voting rights. You're messing with my unemployment. You got the veterans living like they living. You can find some money to house these little children. Nothing about the children. I'm talking about our psyche as Americans.
Mm-hmm.
You can find money to house these children in some abandoned buildings and get them upgraded, but you can't find money to house these homeless vets that's in everybody's city living under a bridge somewhere. I don't understand that.
Yeah.
So when you start having those kinds of conversations, and yet this is the same group of people that proclaim to be fiscally responsible, and yet you're going to waste millions of dollars, A, on the Benghazi hearing that we – that has been dispelled 12,000 times, B, on suing the president that you have no ground or basis on, but you want to talk about being fiscally conservative and how, you know, you're concerned about, no, you're not. That's a lie from the pit of hell. You're not concerned about nobody's future. You're concerned about keeping your money where you got it. That's that.
Yeah. You know, you were talking about the fact that Sarah Palin doesn't have a leg to stand on. But what's interesting is that Eric Holder, Attorney General Eric Holder, kind of took some shots out of the day. And he said he was speaking with Pier Thomas on ABC News this week. Holder took a swing at Palin, according to the Huffington Post, dismissing her credentials, as you mentioned, but making such a statement. She wasn't a particularly good vice presidential candidate, Holder said. She's an even worse judge of who ought to be impeached and why. Palin issued her call for Obama to be impeached Tuesday in a column on Breitbart.com, right, comparing Obama to an abusive spouse and writing, the many impeachable offenses of Barack Obama can no longer be ignored. And, of course, he just dismissed her by saying that, you know, she was a horrible vice presidential candidate and an even worse person to even judge who ought to be impeached. And he pretty much echoed your comments.
Yeah, because it's unnecessary.
Yeah, absolutely. So she has
no credibility. So
yeah. So I want to, since we're on politics, I want to shift to immigration. Because it is interesting to me that we've seen an increase in the amount of people, and specifically the children, coming over to the United States right around the Texas border. So first question for you is, what do you attest to the increase in the number of refugees coming over? And B, why is President Obama to be the blame as the Republican Party is trying to attest it?
Well, you know, let's just keep it 100, as they say. When the president gave his press conference and stated that basically there wasn't a whole lot of air distance between he and Governor Perry as to how to address the issues on the border, that's because these are ideas that they've always had in terms of how to address it. So the fact that it's come from the president means it's not something we're supposed to do from a Republican standpoint, although it's what y'all wanted to see happen, which is weird. So now you don't want him, you want him to use executive power to put federal guard people down on the border and just not glue Congress, but yet that's one of the same things you were talking about in suing them for was the use of executive orders. So there is just a whole bunch of confusion there. Then you have the fact that whatever is happening in these countries that seems to be, let's send our children to America on such a dangerous journey where, you know, probably more don't make it than do because of how they get here. And when they get to the border, they're not just running across aimlessly. They actually give themselves up. They go turn themselves over to the federal agents. And so the spin you hear from the right wing, the Sean Hannitys of the world, is like it's, you know, a bunch of little gangbangers running across the border at full speed and you know, we have no defense against that. And that's not the case. But that's how they're spinning it. But it is unfortunate that a country is in such disarray, that a parent is in such disarray, that they would rather send their child along this journey in such horrible and deplorable conditions just to make it out. I mean, you hear the stories of children who were killed because they were not going to be in the game. They were trying to leave, and girls who have been raped and placed in sex trafficking and prostitution in those countries, and so they're being sent here to get away from that wave of violence and immorality there. And what we can't do is continue to be the morality police of the world because we're not taking very good care of our own issues. And
yeah.
So there has to be, I mean, really, there has to be a balance. I mean, you have all, and I know we're going to get to it, you have all the violence happening in Chicago continually. Every year we end up doing a segment on the violence in Chicago. Since we've been on the air, we've done something about the violence in Chicago every summer. And when does it become a national issue? When does it become we need to do more than what we're doing? When does the mayor of the city of Chicago get held accountable for his lack of action or whatever action they're taking not being enough? And so we can't keep being the moral police of the world when we're not handling some of our own moral issues at home. That's number one. But because of the law, we have to abide by the law that our Congress people signed and back in 2008, that if they come here, we have to process them, and they go through this process, and then they end up probably staying because they're probably not going to come back to court. So then make the adjustments to the law. Why are you looking president? Because I thought Congress made the law. I could be wrong.
Yeah, see, that's the problem right there. Everybody want to blame
they
the president.
Were part of
yeah.
the legislative
that's right. that's
branch
right.
of government, and he's part of the executive branch of government, right? They're part, I mean, you know, there's some...
So I could be wrong. It might be 5 branches instead of 3. You know, maybe they've added some since they've been there.
Well,
and I'm not privy to
Rick Perry. Let's ask Rick Perry. He can remember them.
Right. Because, you know, he get numbers mixed up. So because of that, I would think if the law is not meeting the intent that y'all thought it was going to meet 6 years ago when y'all signed it and agreed to it and sent it to George Bush, and you see now what, because, you know, it might take a little while for you to realize that something ain't quite right, you know? So you've had this law in place now 6 years, and you're saying some things now that maybe you didn't see 6 years ago. Okay, let's go back and amend it and make it work. I mean, I don't know why. I mean, why can't that be done? And part and parcel with go ahead on and addressing the real issue around immigration anyway. So why can't we, you know, address this part in the emergency sense? Somebody come up with a bill that addresses what you found to be the issue right now. Come up with a bill. I'm sure the president will sign it. And in the process, still be working out this whole immigration thing. But that requires work, and you're too busy wanting to sue the president for non-issues than actually working on a real problem. Your solution, as Reverend Allen says, looking for a problem that really don't exist.
Right. You know, what's interesting to me is that, especially on immigration, is the fact that President Bush actually signed a law that really caused all this to happen, and now President Obama is the one that's really following the law, and then the GOP is trying to hold him accountable, and yet the Republicans continue to address this issue as it is his fault, as is it if president's fault. And so when something is so clear like that, that, you know, one thing has nothing to do with the other, then it's obvious to me that the agenda of the GOP has nothing to do with trying to, you know, go about America's business, right? They only have one agenda, and that they have pretty much stuck to that agenda the entire time, even though it cost them the White House twice. They have really stuck to the agenda of, you know, doing everything they can to not make this presidency a success. So having said that, I mean, what do you think is likely to get done in the last few years of President Obama's administration?
Well, we're going to have to push them, and the only way something of substantial value would happen is if we get more seats in the House of Representatives and get rid of some of those Republicans in there that are not doing not only us but the country any good, and we make sure we hold on to the Senate. So that requires action. Voting is something that you go and do. It's a process. You know, you have to do something, whether that's by absentee, whether that's mail-in, whether that's early. I don't care what it is, but you have to participate in the process in order to work. And so that's the one thing we have to do, that we make sure that the president has people around him in which he can work with. We got the Affordable Care Act because of the control of the both of the House and the Senate in 2009 and 2010. So that's how we got the Affordable Care Act. So if we want things, if we want a jobs bill, it's obviously that this one is not going to give it to us. This particular Congress is not giving it to us. So if we want something done on jobs, we want something done on immigration, we want something done on some of the EPA things that are going on out there. We want something done on education. We want something done with our veterans. Then we need to have people that are of like mind, not necessarily agree with everything, but at the end, but whose goal is to get down the street. I don't necessarily care if you skip. I don't care if you run. I don't care if you walk. I don't care if you crawl. But if our goal is to get to the end of the street, then let's find our way getting to the end of the street. However we get there, let's get there. And so right. In order for us to get there, we got to have people who want to get to the end of the street. If you just want to get to the end of your driveway, you're not helping me because
right.
I want to get to the end of the street. So
right.
I need somebody that wants to get to the end of the street. My team needs to get to the end of the street. I don't need to get to the end of the driveway. So if all you want to do is obstruct me from getting to the end of the street, you're not helping me. So the president needs people around him that want to get to the end of the street, not necessarily the same way he does, But the principles and the values that he holds will push them towards getting to the end of the street. And he's not going to get that with this particular Congress, those the House of Representatives for sure. And so it's important that the Mitch McConnells lose his seat in his race in Kentucky. So those voters down in Kentucky, those Democratic voters in Kentucky, and those independent voters need to make sure Mitch McConnell is done. That's what he needs to make sure happens, you know, so that we are ensured that the Senate is held and that we gain seats in the House. The problem, though, also is although we gained more seats in the House because of the redistricting that they did in some of these Republican districts, it almost canceled itself out. And so it's important that on a local level, we talk about this all the time, too, that on a local level you're paying attention to what's happening in your state, because it's your state people that are drawing these lines of redistricting. And I want to say it was Florida who this week, where a federal judge came down and said what they did was unconstitutional in terms of the lines that they drawn and how things were and how it is impacting voting and it's impacting those sorts of things. So we have to really pay attention and be engaged at all levels of the process, not just nationally, but you've got to know what's happening in your home state, because they're the ones that's making it really tough on you. Because if you look at the states that are refusing the Medicare expansion, those are all Republican states, and most of them have some very poor constituents who could really benefit from insurance. And so, you know, but because of your hatred towards the commander-in-chief, you'd have all these thousands, hundreds of thousands of people suffer because of this. And yet you talk about being fiscally responsible, and we all know that prevention, intervention, saves us money.
Yeah, no doubt about it.
True prevention saves us money. If I can prevent you from getting sick, then I'm not going to have to pay all the emergency room costs and for you to get your primary care to the ER, where we know everything in ER is 3 to 4 times more than what it is regularly going to see a primary care doctor. So, you know, it's almost like how do you justify that what you're doing as a governor of a state, that you're really looking out for the needs of the people. And so I said all of that. I went all the way around the world and came back. But in order for it to happen, we've got to ensure that the president has people around him in these last 2 years that can assist him in moving things forward on immigration, on jobs and job creativity, and health care and things of that nature.
Well said. Well, it's time for our break at the top of the hour here. And after we come back, we're going to be doing our Black Acre blog segment, Black Acre Policy Forum. You're listening to Current Events with Patrick Cook. Be back in a moment.
Enterprises have joined forces with Google Inc. and Amazon.com. With this new partnership, our companies, TaylorMade Training and Consulting, Current Events, and Ask Gina, can now offer you the best deals 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. Whether you're looking for discounted books for your book club or a very special gift for a friend, family member, or loved one, TaylorMade's Marketplace is where you should go first. Visit our website at TaylorMade101.com and click on Marketplace to get the best deals today.
Current Events with Patrick Cook is joining the fight with First Lady Michelle Obama to help feed hungry children and stop childhood obesity. During the school year, many children receive free and reduced price breakfast and lunch as a result of the school breakfast and national school lunch programs. However, when the last bell sounds, marking the end of the school year, for many, it marks the beginning of hunger that will plague them throughout the summer. Here at Current Events, we're going to fill that nutrition gap. and make sure children can get the nutritious meals they need. To learn how you can help with this worthy cause, go to TaylorMade101.com and click on Hunger Free. That's TaylorMade101.com and click on Hunger Free.
Thank you for your call. Let me read you a couple of my Twitter family, and then I'll have you respond, Dr. Hutchinson. But I want to read the first one from one of my best Twitter family members, Ask Jima. And Ask Jima says, Reverend Al, today is my birthday, and I'm sitting in Barnes & Noble Starbucks watching you online, driving people around me crazy, and I want to wave at her and the folks she's driving crazy and wish her a happy birthday on her 21st birthday. That's my friend, and of course, my Eastbourne friend.
Stay tuned. We'll be back with more of Current Events with Patrick Cook.
Patrick Cook.
PR News in Washington, I'm Janine Herbst. Secretary of State John Kerry is affirming America's strong relations with Germany amid an espionage controversy that has strained ties. As NPR's Peter Kenyon reports, Kerry met with Germany's foreign minister on the sidelines of nuclear talks in Vienna.
Kerry came to Vienna to check on the effort to reach a nuclear accord with Iran, but he took time for a meeting with German Foreign Minister Frank-Walter Steinmeier that touched on a variety of international crises. Afterward, Kerry called the U.S.-German relationship a strategic one of great importance. Kerry made no mention of the spying allegations or the decision by Germany to expel a U.S. intelligence official. Steinmeier did refer obliquely to difficulties in the bilateral relationship in recent weeks, but said ties with the U.S. are necessary and indispensable. The spying controversy isn't the only outside issue to intrude on the nuclear talks. Steinmeier is headed to Israel Monday, and French Foreign Minister Laurent Fabius arrived in Vienna saying that a ceasefire in Israel and the Gaza Strip is a top priority. Peter Kenyon, NPR News, Vienna.
And while the focus of that meeting in Vienna is on Iran's nuclear program, international pressure is growing to end hostilities between Israel and Hamas. NPR's Ari Shapiro reports Kerry and others are discussing the crisis today.
Overnight, Israel staged its first small ground incursion into Gaza from the sea. Tanks are building up along the border, and it's still not clear whether a large-scale ground assault will take place. The UN Security Council is calling for a ceasefire between Israel and Hamas. Today, foreign ministers from the U.S., Britain, Germany, and France are meeting to discuss a joint initiative that would seek an end to the conflict. Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu says international pressure will make no difference. He says Israel will continue its military operation until rocket fire from Gaza stops. People with foreign passports are being evacuated from the Gaza Strip, and the Israeli military has dropped leaflets telling residents of some Gaza neighborhoods to leave their homes. Ari Shapiro, NPR News, Jerusalem.
Meanwhile, the death toll continues to climb in Gaza. Palestinian health officials report more people killed today, bringing the total to 170 since Tuesday when Israel's military campaign began, with more than 1,000 injured. There's also been a dramatic rise in the number of people seeking shelter. The United Nations says at least 17,000 people have been displaced. One person is dead. At least 19 people were injured when a car and a Greyhound bus collided on an Indiana highway this morning. Jeff Kappa, Wayne County Sheriff, says the car had been stolen and was traveling the wrong way on the highway.
It is unclear as to how the Mustang entered the interstate and was being driven westbound in eastbound lanes prior to the collision.
Police say the driver of that Ford Mustang was killed. The bus driver was airlifted to the hospital. At the World Cup in Brazil, the final, Germany and Argentina, they're battling it out for the win right now. There is no score. They are in extra time. This is NPR. In Washington State, a wildfire burning near Antietam is 25% contained. But the worry now is that storms forecast to arrive later today with dry lightning could fuel the fire. Residents of several homes have been told to evacuate, and people in another 500 homes have been told to get ready to leave just in case. Renowned American conductor Lauren Mazel has died. NPR's Sam Sanders reports he conducted more than 5,000 live performances during his long career.
By the time he was 15, Mazel, a child prodigy, had conducted most of the major American orchestras. He went on to conduct the Vienna State Opera and the Munich Philharmonic, among many others. In 2008, he famously conducted the New York Philharmonic in an unprecedented concert in North Korea. Mazel was known for the precision in his conducting and for conducting without a score. In a 2012 interview with PBS, he said there are two rules to doing the job well.
Conductors are there to conduct, not to make speeches. And two, they are there to give a beat that everybody can understand.
Mm-hmm.
It's as simple as that.
Mazel died Sunday in Castleton Farms, Virginia, from complications following pneumonia. He was 84 years old. Sam Sanders, NPR News.
Astronauts on board the International Space Station will be getting a fresh shipment of supplies soon. Orbital Sciences Corporation launched a cargo ship this morning from the Virginia coast. Cygnus is unmanned, but it has more than 3,000 pounds of supplies, mostly food, but also on board mini satellites, science samples, and experimental exercise outfits. NASA says the new type of clothing is resistant to bacteria and odor buildup. This is NPR News from Washington.
Welcome back to Current Events with Patrick Cook. To join the conversation, the number to call is 323-580-5712. Once again, the number is 323-580-5712. Now it's time for Black Acre segment, and you all know one of my favorite parts of the show. And I encourage you again, as I do always, to go out to Black Acre Policy Forum. .org. I mean, there's a lot of good information out there, a lot of good material. So, indeed, I would encourage you to go out there and just take a look at the blog. And so I think you'll get a lot out of it. It's time for Black Acre Policy Forum, a progressive think tank founded by Leo Baron Hicks, a place where a new dialogue concerning public policy can find innovative strategies and bold solutions. Welcome to Black Acre Policy Forum.
I'm able to see clear the right, cause Louis H. Slattimore improved the light, and J.A. Burr invented the lawnmower. Let me expand the mind of all you young soldiers. Sarah Boone invented the...
Today's title is, Should We Drug Test the Supreme Court? Now, quite naturally, this is a very provocative title, and I'm going to read it, of course, but I encourage you to go out there and take a look at it. It is a very thought-provoking and pretty plausible argument, I think he makes. So take a listen, and let me get your opinion on this. And again, like always, to join the conversation, the number to call is 323-580-5712. Once again, the number is 323-580-5712. And again, the question posed here is, should we drug test the Supreme Court? Is it time to drug test the Supreme Court? Considering the plethora of recent court decisions, it's a fair question to ask. Ponder Citizen United versus the Federal Election Commission, money is speech. Santa Clara County versus Southern Pacific Railroad, corporations are people. McCutcheon's versus Federal Election Commission, aggregate campaign contribution limits are violations of free speech. And the town of Greece versus Galloway, religious prayer may be used to open secular legislative sessions. Now, there is also the recent court decision striking down a Massachusetts law that established a 35-foot buffer around abortion clinics, as well as the 8-1 decision wherein the court held that Fred Phillips and his loathsome Westboro Baptist Church are within their First Amendment rights to protest the private funerals of dead U.S. servicemen. But one of the most troubling decisions is the Burwell versus Hobby Lobby case, in which the court ruled that closely held for-profit corporations have the right to deny certain birth control coverages to their employees if said contraceptives are opposed on religious grounds. Needless to say, many have taken strong exception to this decision. One such person was Nebraska Judge Richard Koff, an appointee of George H.W. Bush, who literally advised the Supreme Court to STFU. On his personal blog, the judge posted this. Five male justices of the Supreme Court, who are all members of the Catholic faith, and who each were appointed by a president who hailed from the Republican Party, decided that a huge corporation with thousands of employees and gargantuan revenues was a person entitled to assert a religious objection to the Affordable Care Act's contraception mandate because that corporation was closely held by family members. To the average person, this result looks stupid and smells worse. Term is the time for the Supreme Court to go quiescent. This term and several past terms has proven that the court is now causing more harm, division to our democracy than good by deciding hot-button issues that the court has the power to avoid. As the kids say, it is time to the court to STFU. Black Acres strives to be respectful, even when we firmly disagree. We therefore shy away from sinking to the level of those who engage in name-calling, extremism, or heated rhetoric. After all, the only thing that happens when you wrestle a pig is that you get very dirty and you make a pig very happy. Nevertheless, while not putting it so bluntly, Judge Koff is absolutely right. The above referenced decisions are absurd, petulant, political statements made by activist judges who twist the law beyond all reason. In so doing, they unduly, perhaps irrevocably divide a nation in urgent need of unification. Our particular objections are as follows. The rulings are bad law and absurd on their collective faces. The incredulity of bad decisions is not made reasonable merely because they are rendered on high. Twisted logic, the absence of common sense, smoke and mirrors, and pomp and circumstances do not make the irrational rational. Money is not speech. Money is personal property, and corporations are not persons. Corporations are legal institutions created to facilitate business and economic development. The stated purpose of this and any other for-profit corporation is to make money for the owners and shareholders, not to impose its religious and political views on its employees. As such, Hobby Lobby has no more of a right to exercise a religion than does a for-profit prison. The rulings are manifestly hypocritical. In the Hobby Lobby case, the court considered the religious freedom of the corporate owners while completely ignoring the religious beliefs of the employees. Nor did it question the sincerity of the owners' belief, even though they said beliefs were crucial to the decision. It is difficult to imagine how any court could decide a case as important as this without examining all relevant evidence. Reflect on the fact that prior to the implementation of the Affordable Care Act, the Hobby Lobby owners covered the very contraceptives they now object to and still invest in the very firm that produce said contraceptives. Contemplate the reality that despite the owners' deeply held religious belief, as to certain contraceptives, they cover birth control in the form of sterilization and vasectomies, as well as the sex and baby-making pill known as Viagra. The last we checked, sterilization, vasectomies, and sex pills are the antithesis of traditional Christian beliefs. Thus, The owner's position appears to be a little more than political antipathy towards the Affordable Care Act, rather than sincere religious beliefs. Moreover, it is inaccurate and misleading to say that the owners of Hobby Lobby or any other corporation pay for their employees' health care coverage. Rather said, care coverage, including the complaint of the contraceptives, is a part of the employee's compensation package. The Hobby Lobby employees therefore earn the coverage in question in the same way that they earn their wages, i.e., they work for them. As to the buffer zone case, we appreciate the court's protection of free speech. However, we cannot help but note that while the court overturned the 35-foot space barrier designed to protect abortion clients and providers, that while it supports the right of a small, virulent, homophobic, and anti-Semitic hate group to protest, and the private funerals of dead soldiers wear banners that read, "God hates fags," thank God for dead soldiers. Thank God for 9/11. Thank God for IEDs and Jewish institutions with signs that state, "The Jews killed Jesus. The Supreme Court reserves until itself a whopping 252 by 98 feet zone of protection. The federal law that established this buffer zone bans the very assemblies, processions, and displays that the court preserves for everyone else. This rank hypocrisy may be lost on the brave men and women on the Supreme Court, but it is not lost on us. The rulings are blatantly unfair and further shift the balance of power to the powerful, the wealthy, and the corporate class. If money is speech, then only the wealthy will be heard. If corporations are persons, then the humanity of others is surrendered. And if only the Supreme Court is worthy of protection, how is the world made safe? The rulings have dire, long-term, unintended consequences. Since corporations are persons within the meaning of the Constitution, then it naturally follows that they are entitled to the full panoply of constitutional rights. In keeping with the First Amendment, they may therefore form their own religions. They may also bear arms and establish corporate armies pursuant to the Second Amendment, vote consistent with the 15th Amendment, and claim the rights not enumerated in the Constitution as stated in the 9th Amendment. Moreover, what is to stop corporate owners from using their newfound religious freedoms to discriminate against the lesbian, gay, bisexual, and transgender community based on a deeply held belief that homosexuality is a mortal sin? The same applies to corporations run by members of the Islamic faith or any other religion. The possibilities are horrifical, endless, and endlessly horrific. Recent Supreme Court decisions do more than cause disrespect for the law and those who make them, namely the Supreme Court. They constitute a can of pestilent worms, a Pandora's box that is not so easily closed. In conclusion, while we generally applaud the holding in Riley versus California requiring a warrant to seize a cell phone and the decision upholding the Affordable Care Act, on the whole, the Supreme Court has behaved recklessly and irresponsibly, deciding important issues based not upon the law or the best interests of the country, but on a narrow but obvious political agenda. By these decisions, the Supreme Court once again demonstrates that the emperor has no clothes. So what's good for the goose is good for the gander. If drug testing is appropriate for welfare recipients, employees, and athletes, a policy and practice which Supreme Court has repeatedly endorsed, then it is also appropriate for the court. After all, given the recent decision, they must be smoking something. Leo Baron Hicks, founder and CEO, Black Policy Forum. Leo, welcome to the show.
Hello, how are you?
Absolutely wonderful. It's always a pleasure to have you join us, man. I tell you, it's always a pleasure to have you join us.
So, man, it's always a pleasure to be on your show, guy.
Man, and that was an amazing piece, breaking down the law and basically just kind of kind of highlighting the ludicrosity, if you will, of the Supreme Court in its recent decisions. I mean, this is, you know, you're right in the fact that, you know, they gave us one, the Affordable Care Act, but they took the last five or six. What's going on with the Supreme Court nowadays?
I don't know, man. And you know, you want to be respectful of the court. Because when I was writing the blog, I was thinking, am I being disrespectful? Am I being silly by even suggesting that we should drug test the Supreme Court? Because, again, you know, you want to be respectful. You want to give credence to our institutions. But you can be too deferential. And the Supreme Court needs to be called out on its absolute absurdity.
You know, and I guess it seems like, I mean, most people are sleeping on these decisions. I mean, you know, once they introduce the whole corporations of people, I mean, you mentioned that the slippery slope that it really provides by saying that now they have religious rights. I mean, where is this going to end, Leo?
Well, you know, I don't know, but I gave some examples. Well, what happens if a corporation decides that they want to start their own religion consistent with the First Amendment right of freedom of religion, and they want to combine capitalism with Christianity? So it's Christianalism or something to that effect.
I like it.
I mean, where do we go with this? I mean, how do we deal with such absurdity?
Yeah. Jim, let me get you to weigh in on this. What do you think about the piece?
Well, I think it was excellent, and I would have to say that, no, Leo, you're not being disrespectful or any of those things to the Supreme Court. I think it's bordering on just on a high level of hypocrisy with some of the rulings that they've come down with as of late. When you talk about, you know, how, you know, the barrier they have from protesters to even be close to the building of the Supreme Court building structure, how wide that barrier is, and yet, you know, they overturn something that was done to protect people going into abortion clinics. It's just one hypocrisy after another. And I was listening to Michael Eric Dyson this week. He was hosting the Ed Schultz show, and he had one of the owners from Ben & Jerry's on there. And he basically said, "There's, you know, corporations are not people, because corporations do not have rights. People have rights. And so for them to try to equate the two, he says, is just, he doesn't even understand how it's possible." And so, and as you stated, that's just, you know, one of many levels of rulings that they've put out that's just kind of fits into the face of what we thought the Supreme Court was supposed to be about. It hasn't been, in my opinion, a court that should be above the politics of it all. They've fallen right into the political fray of it all, and it's kind of losing its value. Like Supreme Court, like, oh, whatever, you know. So,
you know, what comes to mind to me, Leo, is a famous phrase in Enemy of the State, where the wife of Will Smith said, "Who's monitoring the monitor of the monitor?" Right, and I want to translate this saying, Leo, what you're doing is quite is not being respectful. So the question becomes, when the Supreme Court gets crazy like this, who's monitoring them? I mean, so my Leo, my question is, if it's not a person like you that pose a question like this, then how do we get the Supreme Court back under control or back in a position, especially with these lifetime appointments, where they won't be making decisions like this?
Well, I think the answer is presidential elections, since presidents are the ones who nominate Supreme Court justices. I mean, the problem with the Supreme Court now is these are 5-4 decisions, and the 5 judges who are making these asinine decisions were all appointed by conservative Republicans. And so they have an agenda. They definitely have an agenda. And the only way to deal with that, since these are lifetime appointments, is you've got to elect presidents who at least put some kind of balance on the Supreme Court. But one of the reasons I wrote the blog was you can't give too much respect to people who don't deserve respect. And in
right.
this case, the Supreme Court doesn't deserve respect. So you got to call them out.
Exactly right. So what about the notion of drug testing? So let's get to that, right? I mean, you clearly outline all of the decisions that are in question, and but the drug testing piece. So you think there's a good case to piss them, as they call it?
Well, just for them to drop urine. Well, you know, when you say things like that, it can be viewed by some people as to be so extreme as to not be worthy of any credibility or any reasonable discussion.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know if I want to have the Supreme Court justices drop urine.
Mm-hmm.
But again, what's good for the goose is good for the gander. Everybody
right.
else is taking drug tests. You know, which the Supreme Court holds all the time. We know people in high positions take drugs as much as anybody else because they've been busted.
Right.
So it's not beyond the pale to at least suggest that if the lowest of the low can be required to take drug tests, then maybe the highest of the high should take drug tests.
Yeah, I definitely agree with that. I wonder, though, if the Supreme Court continues to make decisions like this, you know, is there a way for the American people to call them out on it? I mean, you know, quite naturally, I don't know if, you know, like, as you mentioned, drug tests being the answer, but is there anything else that the American people can do, I mean, other than raise questions like this?
Sure, there are two things. Vote for a president who will appoint reasonable judges or impeachment. Supreme Court judges can be impeached, but you can't impeach them because they make decisions that you don't agree with. That's
right.
not an impeachable offense.
Mm-hmm.
So pretty much you're stuck with them. That's the bottom line.
Wow. Yeah, I mean, so that just goes to show you the importance of picking a president. It goes beyond you liking the person or goes beyond your political party, but – you know, I mean, these people that have these lifetime appointments, they get on and make these decisions like that. And what's interesting, these decisions are supposed to be, you know, not supposed to be political decisions, but it clearly seems to me to suggest that they're political decisions. I don't know how they're able to get away with that without being challenged.
It's the arrogance of power.
Mm.
If you have power, you can do any damn thing you want to.
Yeah. And that's clearly what they're doing. It is. I know. So I wanted to ask you about the Chicago shootings. What do you think is going on out there, Leo?
Well, you know, I tell you, I discussed this with some of my colleagues, and when I discussed it, the first thing out of their mouths was they, when it should have been we or us. 82 people were shot in Chicago over the 4th of July weekend. I think 16 died. Of those 82 people, 5 were shot by police officers. I'd be willing to bet a blog that 90 to 98% of the remainder of the people shot in Chicago were African Americans, and they were shot by African Americans.
Mm-hmm.
So what's causing? I mean, what's causing these people to kill up each other? Then I mean, obviously, it's some turmoil has to continue to be stirred up. When I look at the news and I see the people crying and talking about they're getting shot, I mean, it can't be about turf, is it? I mean, it can't be about drugs and things of that nature. So it has to be somebody inciting this feud. Do you believe it's really rooted that deeply where African Americans have to kill each other?
Well, I don't know. I mean, I guess there are a number of causes, but I can tell you what I think is one cause. We have a culture that has grown sick and demented. That's the bottom line. Something is fundamentally wrong with the African American psyche and the African American culture. And we have got to take personal responsibility for what we do and personal responsibility for turning it around. It ain't them, it's us.
So, but again, you know, I agree. It's certainly something that we need to turn around. But I'm wondering though, in 2014, what's causing an African American to kill another African American? It has to be some underlying issue that we must not be aware of for that to be happening. I mean,
I'd like to get Jimmy in on the conversation. But look, let me point this out though. We have had it worse in terms of racism and the world being against us than we do now. When we were freed from slavery, we had it a whole lot worse than we do now. When we were dealing with the Red Summer of 1919, where white folks was just picking us off the street, taking us and hanging us and castrating us, we had it worse than we do now. And we did not treat each other the way we did then, the way we're doing now, because the African-American culture was completely different.
See, Jim, what do you think about that? I mean, the fact that, the times were certainly harder then than now, but for the most part, we are not in a position where we're that much better off that we need to be killing each other.
Well, I think it's deeper than that. You have to, you know, I agree with Leo in terms of, you know, there has to be some personal accountability and responsibility. And so when you begin to peel back the layers and you start to ask the question of, it's not just why did you do this, it's what made you feel that was okay. Because, you know, my why could be because my mama left me or I was hungry or they looked at me crazy. The why can come with so many different things. But what about that action that when you decide to pull the trigger, you thought that was okay to do? What has happened in your world that you devalue life and you devalue yourself in such a manner that it's okay for you to take somebody else's life? Who told you that? Where have you seen that? What images have been planted into your world, into your mind, that tells you that type of behavior would be glorified and that type of behavior would be okay? That's what you have to get to, and that's the accountability piece Leo talks about, that we as a community, somewhere along the line, we allowed ourselves to be lulled into this this sleep of apathy. We often even talk about, you know, we come from a generation, a race of that valued education, but you wouldn't be able to tell that by what we see today. I mean, you had people who would get beat because they were trying to learn how to read, and now you have children who don't want to read. What happened, you know, in that dash? You know, you talk about life, you have a beginning and an ending. What's in the dash? So what's happened in our dash, in our culture, from we went from being a race of people that value certain things, life, we value respect and morality, we had a sense of divine intervention, whether it was God, Allah, whoever you was worshiping, you had a sense of respect for a higher power, so to speak. And the dash now, we look at where we are now, and those things have dwindled away. And so the accountability piece in terms of we have to own some of that. Because it's not the man that's pulling the trigger. That's Pookie pulling the trigger. And so, okay, Pookie's pulling the trigger. I have to figure out how Pookie got the gun and what made Pookie think it was okay to have the gun, and then what made him think killing somebody was the best way to handle whatever situation he had to deal with. So there's a lot there. And so we can't just look at the surface. It goes back to the conversation when we talk about racism. If we want to deal with the issue, we have to pull all the layers back. And some of them are not going to be comfortable. We're going to have to admit where we made mistakes. We're going to have to admit where we bought into the I'm not snitching, I'm not telling anybody. We got to admit to being the parent that allowed your child who don't have no job to come in your house with $200 and $300 pair of tennis shoes that you know you didn't buy, that allowed your child to come in with flat screen TVs to put in your house and you living in the project and not say nothing about it. We the man ain't doing that. You are allowing that to happen in your house. So you have to own that. We have to own that. And we don't want to pull the layers back
far enough to look at our own ugliness of what we have allowed to happen. And until we do that, you know, we can have all the rallies and the marches and the protesters in the world, but we've got to own up to the part we've played in this. If I'm 200 pounds overweight, it is not just McDonald's fault. You know what I'm saying? It is not just the food intake. I'm also, you know, responsible for that. I'm responsible for how I treat my body. I'm responsible for that. So I can't blame you because I'm 200 pounds overweight. I gotta own some of that. So I have to make some changes to what I do. And so until we own parts of ourselves that are the ugliest, then we will not get past the surface. We just won't get past it.
Right. So Leah, you posted a blog along this, looks like last week, called Future Now. You got time for me to go through it, or you want to talk about it?
Well, look, I'm your servant, dude.
Okay. So you talked about this in a blog called Future Now. And I want to take a moment to kind of to go over it because I think this is important. And I want to warn you there, some of the language in here might not be for all audiences, but I think is worth at least covering to get to some of the issues that are listed here. So Future Now. Again, this is at blackacrepolicyforum.org. Future Now. The now is vampire. Every thirsting for blood. Ever hunger for plasma. The Malu is a pornographer, denuding both body and soul. The era is called whore, of cheap perfume and sex without love, possessing neither pride nor dignity. The future is pimp, demanding the lewd and the lascivious of all his bitches. From place to place, for ages, seconds, maybe eons, Devontae Jenkins observes a fast wasteland of nothingness, an expensive landscape of scrabbling and brush that is the future. The palpable appearance of desperation grips the ethos, producing a collective dirge, depressing and without hope. The era possesses its own voice, an unspoken vocabulary that is nonetheless audible. The sounds of joy and laughter are noticeable absent. Rot, decay, and poison are more than mere words and far greater than simple speech. They are instead orders, demands of everyone and everything to fail. The sickening thud of shattering lives, the muffled sound of apathy and the whimper of defeat are the music of the day, an aria turned to a volume that deafens the ear, that steals the heart. No way, fool, is the constant refrain of this bleak now. Crack country and asphalt cry in pain, and structure communicate the shame of splintered boards and dilapidated facades. Each breed carries a mournful way as the land begs for mercy. Leo Baron hits cotton prophecy. The above world of profane resignation and bleak existence is no idle conjecture. This dystrophic future is instead what may but must not happen. The question is, what steps must we take to prevent this or some similar diaspora from occurring? How can we prevent the slow but inevitable collapse of African-American society? How do we halt and reverse our ever-accelerating slide into cultural despair and social insignificance? So let me pause there for a moment and get you to respond on that so far. So Leo, where were you trying to go there? Where are you going there?
Well, that's my vision of African American society if the trend lines continue.
Ah.
Where we could be as a group of people in the next 10 or 15 years. But what's more disturbing is that may be where we are right now. If you look at Chicago, or St. Louis or Memphis or any other large metropolitan area that has a lot of African Americans and minorities, that is eerie in terms of that may well describe many of our communities now.
Mm-hmm. So you have a couple of policy decisions on here. Let's take one by one. So the first one, it says policy recommendation number one. And it says control the message, protect the brand. In the context of this discussion, the word brand means reputation, status, or image. Sadly, for the last few decades, the image of African Americans have been savaged. We must therefore repair our brand with all due haste. And the first step in doing so is to craft a core message that puts family in the best possible light. Talk a little bit about that.
Well, the image now of African Americans is a disastrous image. I mean, you certainly have exceptions to it. But if you go to the Trayvon Martin case, for example, Trayvon Martin lost his life because the image of the African American male is a hooded, tattooed, thug, gangster, pimp. Now, we know that all African American males aren't like that. We know that. But if you act like a pimp, you can't be surprised if you're treated like a pimp. If you walk around like a thug and a gangster, don't be surprised if people treat you like a thug and a gangster. And let me give you an example of what I mean. This is this is not a rhetorical question. Have you ever occasioned a situation where an African-American, young African-American male or female, is blasting music that is so loud and so profane, and every other word out of that music is MF and BITCH and whore and sucker and punk and all of that, and the N word with every beat and every syllable loud enough for anybody in the world to hear? Have you ever run across that occasion, Mr. Cook?
Absolutely, and more often than I probably should, but absolutely.
Right. So if the message and the image that we're projecting is that in our worldview, you know, you're MF, you're punk, you're a sucker, you're BITCH, the N-word, let's say Negro, every other word is that. That's not a good image for us to be projecting. And if you will notice, like McDonald's, they are very protective of their brand. If that hamburger is not the McDonald's hamburger, if people don't wear the McDonald's uniform, they do not work in that corporation. Branding and image is crucial, and unfortunately, we have let our image slide into something that's horrible.
Yeah, I definitely agree with you. We often talk about on this show about getting a publicist, you know, somebody that can go out and help us get our image back together. Because right now, when you look at it, if you take a survey and you ask a question about who we are as a people, you're not going to get a solid understanding of who that is. And now, granted, we're not a monolithic person, right? We're not all the same. We don't all think alike, act alike, do the same thing. But for the most part, we shouldn't all also be seen in a negative light, if you will. And for the most part, I think that's what's happening across the board. When you look at African Americans collectively, they're seen in a more of a negative light than in a positive light. And I think that's bad. So, Jim, what do you think about the policy recommendation number one?
Brandon. I agree. I think it is important that we take a look at our brand and begin to redefine who we are. I mean, you know, everybody goes through a growing up phase. You can take Reverend Sharpton, for example. You know, at some point he realized he couldn't be walking around with gold chains on and jogging suits, and he wanted, you know, have an impact on what's happening on the policy side. He had to rebrand himself, and that's exactly what he's done. He's rebranding himself. Now, people don't like it because now they want to say he's a sellout, but he's rebranded himself, and I think we have to get back to that part of our culture that value those things that we say we value. We value education. We valued one another. We valued ourselves. We valued our community. You know, we valued having a sense of spirituality. And so those are the things we have to get back to. And so how do we do that? We do it by not accepting the Real Housewives of Atlanta, by not accepting the ratchetness that's on television and the images that they portray of black women and family, of black families, which it's hard to find a black family, but even just the black male or the black female. We can't allow those images to be perpetuated nightly.
So how do you get to a position where that becomes a society's reality? So Lee, let me ask you this question real quick. So if you are a young African American male living in a rural neighborhood and you don't see any of those positive images, and when you go to the store, the magazines show rappers. When you turn on your TV on the news, they show criminals. When you look in the newspaper, they show negative lights of African American. Where do people get this positive image that they should be acting like? Because otherwise, they think this is their reality, right? This is a culture in which they grew up in, and that's all they know. And I see that in a lot of cases, there are no positive images being portrayed for the young African American male to look to aspire to.
Two things. Number one, I think we as a people like Rosa Parks and Martin Luther King engaged in the Montgomery bus boycott. There is nothing wrong with African Americans boycotting those institutions that project a negative image of African Americans. And I'm talking about even boycotting some of our own magazines and some of our own newspapers. Gina brought up something I think that was very important. That is the Real Housewives of this, that, and the other. Those are some of the tackiest shows that you would ever want to see on TV. All it does is brand African-American women as big butt, big-ass trollops who are selfish and who are shallow and who are attention whores, who are overly made up and overly glamorized, who have no sense of class, responsibility, or dignity whatsoever. And we as a people can boycott those shows and let those people who produce those shows know we ain't having it. Mm-hmm. I think that's one thing that we can do. I think another thing we can do is we can tell African-American men that the real uniform of success is a suit and tie and not sagging pants. And one of the ways that you get the brothers to stop sagging is the sisters. Because if the sister said, brother, you ain't getting with me with your pants sagging, we would own belt companies.
Yeah. You know, I had that same conversation with a young lady a couple of days ago, and I told her that, you know, they, in essence, they set the standard, right? If they cater to young men acting out, young men will continue to act out. If they say, you know, I'm not going to pay attention to that, I'm not going to laugh or giggle or pay, you know, give you the time of day when you act that way, then they'll change their attitude and behavior. And so I definitely agree with you on that. And I think, you know, so where's the courage then in our society to do that? Because you can't really just blame the young men and women for acting out or behaving what they see, right? It's incumbent upon the adults or the responsible people to do those things, right? To go out and say, hey, enough is enough. We don't like this image. So where's the courage of our society to do that, Leo?
Well, I'm not quite sure I have an answer for you, but I can tell you in my own experience that I often go and lecture like to community colleges and some college. And I tell the brothers, you can't make it sagging. And they sit there and argue with me, which just teased me off to no end, because they always say, you're supposed to help us, but when we try to help them, then they argue with us. and it goes back to something that Jim and I was talking about at the last broadcast. People like you and I have a responsibility to reach back, but they have a responsibility to reach up. And if they don't reach up, then I really don't have a lot of time for them. I'll be frank with you.
So positive recommendation number two, capitalism, go all in. It, however the world is defined, is about money. Always has been, always will be. That being the case, we should also be about our money. Talk about that, Leo.
We should own our own businesses. We should own our own homes. Forget renting apartments. Forget renting TVs. Forget renting hair. Forget renting nails. Forget buying tattoos. Mm-hmm. We have to change our spending habits to value those things that have lasting value, that appreciate in value, that build our estate, and that we can transfer to our heirs. We need to be producers instead of consumers, period.
Yeah, I often say green trumps black every time. If you got that green paperback, and people will still act a certain way, but they would definitely give you a whole lot of respect if you got some green. So I don't care what color you is, but, yeah, I have to agree with you on that. So you also put down here a couple of objectives, you know, a few of them, in fact. You said objective one, essentially a question of values, essentially a question of values. We simply must alter our spending habits. We should shift from purchasing items which do not appreciate in value. Objective two, we should preserve and transfer our wealth to future generations via the rigorous practice of asset and growth management, and we should embrace capitalism and entrepreneurship in all their myriad forms. The basic idea is to move from being consumers of immaterial goods and services to producers of valuable goods and services. Leo, what about the poor and impoverished that are in rural communities that make up a large portion of our society and don't have a lot of income? They're just making it from payday to payday. How do you propose that they could, you know, position themselves to do these things?
Well, I tell you, I'm not quite sure I buy the proposition that we are poor, at least to this extent. The spending power of African Americans is $1.1 trillion. Most of the countries in the world don't have a GNP of $1.1 trillion. It is a question of what we do with our money as opposed to not having money. And unfortunately, we are spending our money on clothes and electronics and personal beauty items and alcohol and the like instead of investing our money in ourselves and our community. I just don't buy the notion, Mr. Cook, that we are helpless or that we are poor, because I just don't think we are.
Right. Jim, what do you think about that?
I agree. I don't think that we're helpless. Helpless means you have no choices, and we do have choices. We choose to spend what we want to spend our money on. We choose to live how we live, in some instances, based on the choices that we've made prior to that. And so when you weed out those people that could do better, if they put their mind to it, then we'd have a lot less, I mean, people needing so much help. I mean, this goes back to when you were talking about we talked about this a while back, how the plant that went down to Alabama, I can't remember which one it was, but the fact that the amount of people that they had to interview to get to a number of people that could pass a drug test, that means making a choice to get high, mm-hmm. and you are smoking yourself out of a job pool, basically.
Right.
Because you couldn't let go of the weed long enough to pass a drug test. And this job paying, you know, $15, $20 an hour down there working at the plant, and you still want to talk about what the man ain't doing, it ain't no job. Well, there's plenty of jobs down there. But you can't stay clean long enough, you can't quit smoking or whatever you're doing to pass a drug test. That ain't the man's fault, that's your fault. So I agree with Leo, some of the choices that we make and what we tend to choose to spend our money on and how we choose to do certain things, we've got to own up to that. And you're right. The numbers are it's almost mind-boggling when you look at the gap and the wealth gap between everybody and us, and then you look at the spending between everybody and us, and it doesn't add up. Something about that isn't making sense to me. And yet the highest level of poverty and all of these other ills of society
falls on us, but then we have the most spending power. So they're in our communities dumping all this stuff in there, all these fast food places and these liquor stores and these the new craze now. What's the smoking thing? Purple haze people. You look on there's a haze place on every other corner now. And so, you know what, and so 'cause they know we're gonna come in there and buy it. I don't know why. But so we spend our money on those sorts of things, but I can't get you to go make sure your child got some money on their card to eat lunch. I don't understand.
Right. Yeah. So at the end of the blog, Leo poses four questions, and they are, do we really want to change, to grow, and to prosper, or are we satisfied right where we are? The second question he posed is, can we save everyone, and should we even try?
Nope.
Thirdly, should we expand our focus beyond African Americans to include others who share our values, interests, and concerns? In other words, should we consider co-branding with other ethnic groups and cultures? And then finally, while it's never too late, is the future already upon us? Are our worst fears already realized? Leo, let's take the question four, last one. What do you think? Is it too late? Is the future upon us?
Well, I don't think it's too late, but I do think the future is upon us. If the thing about Chicago is Chicago doesn't stand alone. I mean, every city in America, again, Memphis, mm-hmm. Omaha, Nashville, Pittsburgh, mm-hmm. Philadelphia, St. Louis, East St. Louis, Watts, every large metropolitan area in the country where black people are have the same level of dysfunction and fratricide that is experienced in Chicago. Maybe not to the same degree, but we're killing each other all over the place. We are. I mean, that is the sad truth. Now, that doesn't mean it's too late to right the ship, but I do think that in large part that diaspora in Future Now is already here.
Wow. All right, Leo, thanks again, man. Give us your final thoughts, and we're going to wrap this section up.
Hey, man, appreciate you. I think you do a great job, and I always look forward to working with you and hearing from Jima. You got a great show, man. Great show.
The pleasure's all. That's Leo Baron Hicks, folks. Go out to blackacrepolicyforum.org. That's BLACKACRE, Policy Forum, all one word, blackacrepolicyforum.org. That's Leo Baron Hicks. Thank you, Leo.
Hey, thank you.
All right, Jima, what are your final thoughts as we wrap up the show today?
Well, final thoughts is, while we were on the air, Germany did win the World Cup. They beat Argentina 1-0. So, yay, Germany, awesome. I guess. I don't know. I only know. Yeah, yay, Germany. So, with the excitement, I think people are anticipating the next 4 years. Not real sure why, but that seems to be what Twitter was talking about. As we bring the rest of our news to a close, my hope and my prayer, my challenge is that we're ever vigilant about what's happening. If you want to be a part of the solution, a part of making an impact in your communities, I know for sure that the National Action Network, under the leadership of Reverend Al Sharpton, has the Freedom Summer going on, where they were going to 8 different states to help get people registered to vote and or whatever needs to happen to make sure those states that have instituted some very restrictive voting laws for this upcoming election, if we can't beat them in the courts, we're going to beat them at the polls. So if the courts are not able to overturn, then what can we do to help? And they're having training sessions all around the country. They'll be coming to Texas. They're in Alabama. They're in Georgia. They're in North Carolina. They're going to be in Mississippi. So go on the website to nationalactionnetwork.net and take a look to see if there's anything you can do to help volunteer whether that's take some people to get their IDs done, babysit a child while people go try to find all their paperwork, whatever you can do to help. Because, like I said, if the courts can't overturn and we can't beat them through the court system, we must beat them at the polls. And so remember, this is summertime. People are not eating. So if you have a local food bank in your area, please donate to that local food bank so they can continue to feed children. If you have a pantry at your church and you know you have some canned goods in your cupboard that you've decided that you don't want, check the expiration date. And if they're any good, go donate them to your church pantry. You'd be surprised that people could just stop by and don't have any food. And we throw away more food during the week than we should. And I'm as guilty of that as anyone. And I've tried to stem that tide just a little bit. And so, you know, figure out ways that you can help. Figure out ways you can be of help to someone outside of yourself. And that, too, could help with our rebranding, as Leo was talking about. On a personal note, get ready. I have an upcoming event with my book, Reflections, What I Know to Be True, coming up in August, on August 30th of this year. So stay tuned for that. Mark the date down. Block it out. Make sure you're going to be available. It's going to be an exciting time, a moment in reflection where I, as the author, will take your questions and will also maybe do some readings from the book and answer questions from you in terms of what inspired that particular passage or whatnot. So stay tuned for that as I solidify my date, my location. I would be ever ready to give you all that information. So, and looking forward to this next week at the summer program.
All righty, sounds good. Oh, thanks to all our listeners for tuning in. That's our show for today. And a special thanks to my co-host, the wonderful, the magnificent Jima Hill Cook. And of course, a special thanks to Leo Baron Hicks for BlackAcrePolicy.com. You're listening to Current Events with Patrick Cook. I'm your host, Patrick Cook, coming to you live from Dallas, Texas, as I do every Sunday at 4 p.m. Central Time, 5 o'clock Eastern. We are the number one resource for small business and nonprofits. Now, don't forget to visit my blog, and that's at tailormadetalkradio.blogspot.com. That's TAILORMADE, Talk Radio, all one word, .blogspot.com. And also, again, we are running the summer program where we're feeding young men and women all from the age of 2-3 years old all the way up to 17. We provide services where they're reading, writing, doing math, doing technology, life skills. We're providing this on a daily basis. And you can come out to 6710 Garner Road in Raleigh, Texas. Send your donation to TaylorMade101.com. That's TAILORMADE 101.com. And click on Hunger Free. Until next time, remember, it is written, my people are destroyed for the lack of knowledge. So stay engaged, stay informed, and stay plugged in to Current Events with Patrick Cook. You're listening to the sounds of Joyce Spencer. Take us away, Joyce.